This is Frank Mandolini, and this is the Last Minute Wrestling Podcast. Hello everybody and welcome to episode number 43 of the Last Minute Wrestling Podcast. As always, I am your host from Italy, Frank Mandolini, and I can't believe it took us 43 episodes to get to interview a referee, because today's guest is none other than NWA referee Jared Fritz. But before we go to the interview with Jared Fritz, I must remind you that today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space, so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast in the How Did You Hear About Podgo section of the application. Thank you so much. Also, I would like to take this space to suggest you to go to superkicks.com, which is S-P-R-K-I-X.com, where you can find some cool wrestling merch. And also, another couple of outlets that I suggest you are grabsapparel.com and themerchstand.co.uk. Wherever you go, tell them that Frank Mandolini from the Last Minute Wrestling Podcast sent you. As always, you can find the Last Minute Wrestling Podcast on our brand new website, which is lmwpodcast.com, or on bodyslam.net, or allEverythingEntertainment.com. All of our social media are at lmwpodcast. Please check us out, like, share, subscribe, thumbs up, comment, whatever you want to do. And, well, there is just one tiny little thing before we go to the interview. But before that, I will let my good friend Tristan Lowe speak, say a few words, okay? Have you
ever felt? Are you listening? Hi, I'm Tristan, host of the Tristan Lowe Show. And you can listen to my podcast, where you currently enjoy this one, and at TristanLawShow.com. The unique part about the Tristan Lowe Show is I introduce you to the personalities in and out of the pro wrestling ring. And you don't have to be a pro wrestling fan to enjoy my podcast. Don't believe me? Well, after you finish listening to my pod brother, Frank Mandolini's Last Minute Wrestling Podcast, search for and listen to The Tristan Lowe Show. Don't forget to subscribe. I'll be waiting for you. Enjoy the episode.
Thank you so much, Tristan. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Just go to paypal.me/forward LMW podcast. Or patreon.com/forward LMW podcast and or ko-fi.com LMW podcast to help us out, basically to offer us your spare change to have a coffee or so. And to stay true to our name, which is Last Minute Wrestling Podcast, I want to make a last minute shout out to AEW Italia, which is an Italian podcast about, well, you guessed it, AEW. Keep up the great work, guys. Well, now that I've said everything that I had to plug, let's go to the interview with the referee, Jared Fritz, NWA family. Hi, Jared, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me on the show, my friend.
I've been wanting to interview a referee for a long, long time now. Being myself a part of the NWA family, Italian chapter probably, I really wanted to have the chance to talk with you, because refereeing is a lost art in my opinion, and you were amazing on NWA Power every time you were in the ring with those workers. So how was the experience of taking part in that show?
Well, first off, thank you so much. I'm super flattered by those words. I don't know if I'm the first referee, but it really means a lot. And when it comes to the experience itself in being there with workers, so I've been doing this for roughly 6 years now, and the NWA, like you said just a minute ago, the NWA family, like NWA is a family, and it's just, it's extremely welcoming. And there wasn't a moment, like I was super anxious because I don't want to say I'm a perfectionist, but I really don't like to let people down. Uh-huh. And making your debut, because I actually made my debut on Into the Fire, which was a pay-per-view. Never worked with a company before, never worked with Thunder Rosa or Tasha Steelz before. So there was a lot of stress and anxiety, but everything, you know, Brian Hebner and Robert King, the other two referees there, they did a great job with just like, you got this, man, you know, just keeping me supported and the cues I needed to look for. And still to this day, they helped me out.
Yeah. Was it different to work on a TV stage that, rather than your normal wrestling venue?
So luckily for me, I've had the opportunity to work with several local promotions here in the Carolinas that do not necessarily TV production, but they do productions where you have to work the hard cam and you have to, you're using IFBs and you're working on communications. So at least I had a taste of that. But in that studio setting, it's a lot different because you're limited to a very small space of which you can move in because there's so many different cameras. So there was that. But other than that, no, I mean, the live crowd, the seating was definitely different than I'm used to. And I really enjoyed it. It's just kind of confusing because the crowd's behind you for most of the time because the hard cam is right in front of you. So it's really weird because you're hearing it, but you know.
Well, you don't see it. You just see like the commentators, and this kind of stuff. And so you said you debuted at Into the Fire. So literally straight into the fire. you were thrown. And how was the experience of that day? Did you knew already some of the people who were working that show or was it everything new?
So luckily there were a couple of people there that I've known Maureen for a long time through the Carolinas. So she's like the mother in heaven. She takes care of everybody. You know, she makes sure that everybody's comfortable there. The Dawson brothers. They were backstage and I've worked with them through the Carolinas many times before. And there was a couple of people that I've worked with like here and there. But a lot of the family back there, I had not gotten a chance to work with. So, I was just kind of keeping to myself, just kind of straight and narrow, making sure, like I said, I didn't want to upset anybody. I didn't want to let anybody down. So, but within the time that I got there from the very first night for the pay-per-view to the very next day, it was like a 180, like just very welcomed in and just taking care of me and going on.
Yeah, as you said before, it's a very welcoming environment. I experienced it myself because when I started this podcast, it was during the pandemic. And the third follower I had was the NWA podcast, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Great guys.
And as I can see from your t-shirt, you're repping them right now. Shout out to Gary Robert Stinson I can't remember.
Will.
Will Martin. Will. Yes. Will, sorry, Will, for not remembering your name. I remember the Twitter handle because we interact a lot through Twitter. So shout out to Will Martin. So great guys, and they were more extremely welcoming to me, and I discovered this cool side of Twitter, and I was talking with myself, just asking, oh, why people say that Twitter is a bad place? It's not. It's the NWA family is fantastic. They were so welcoming. Then I learned the hard way, the other part of Twitter. But it took me a little while to get there. So that was really, really cool. But yeah, as you said, it's a very welcoming environment, and were you, even before working with them, were you an NWA fan? NWA fan, I should say, and maybe from, I don't know, the old time of Dusty Rhodes and this kind of stuff. Did you follow the product back then?
Absolutely. So I've always been a wrestling fan since I was about 6 or 7 years old, but my mom never really wanted me to watch it because she, of course, thought I was going to, you know, break my neck or whatever it might be. But I used to get to watch it with my uncle at his house, and he watched a lot of NWA. And at that time, like, I could tell the difference between NWA and with WWE or WWF at the time. There was a lot of fanfare and showmanship with WWF, and I liked that for what it was. But as I got older, like, I really appreciated, and even to this day, I love watching old WCCW, AWA, like the old stuff, because I really like that old traditional wrestling. And you knew anytime there was the blue and gold that it was going to be a really, really good show, no matter what it was.
Yeah. And the look of that ring is fantastic. One of the nice touch that the modern version of the NWA under Billy Corgan had is that they brought back that look of that,
yes,
that ring. Oh, that's amazing. That's such a great stuff. But you said that you started your career as a referee 6 years ago. And before that, correct me if I'm wrong, you were an Olympic athlete, right?
So correction there, I wasn't an Olympic athlete, but I did work at the 2008 Olympics. I'm a licensed massage therapist. I've been doing that for about 16 years. Okay. And in 2008, I traveled with the women's U.S. national soccer team to the Beijing Olympics, and I worked with them. And I've worked with U.S. soccer on and off for a period of time, and now I've kind of transitioned and focused on more of my local community here in Charleston, South Carolina. But every wrestling show that I go to, I take my massage chair into the locker room, and, you know, if any of the boys or girls need it, I try to help them out wherever I can.
Yeah, you do that. But how was the atmosphere at the Olympic Village? I'm so curious about it.
So I spent about 6.5 weeks in China. We had to go to several different cities. I didn't get to experience the Olympic Village per se, with the exception of just going in there for the daytime, because we actually had to stay offline. But it was super humbling to see the amount of talent and athletes that are there, and going into the food court to eat your lunch and just seeing, like, Michael Phelps over here and somebody over, and just like, oh man, like, this guy just won a gold medal in fencing or something like that. You know, it's just really cool.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I can imagine meeting with people from different nationalities and this kind of stuff. Yeah, that must have been really cool. And what brought you into refereeing?
So oddly enough, this is a really great segue. The doctor that was with the team at the 2008 Olympics ended up being a doctor for WWE right after that. And he's like, listen, I'd like to hire you on as a massage therapist whenever we're in your area. Long story short, I worked with him a couple times, parted ways, and I wanted to find out how I could get back into that. And I met up with a guy who was also a massage therapist here in Charleston, who is also a pro wrestler here.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, did you not know we had pro wrestling here? I was like, no. I mean, I knew WWE, NWA, New Japan. Like, I didn't know we had the indies right here. I came in simply as a sponsor to work on the guys. Mm-hmm. They wanted to run an angle with my friend and me, like, where I could be part of the story. But in South Carolina, you have to have a license. So I had to go train for a short period of time. And when I did, the guy who trained me was like, listen, you could actually be a part of the show. You could do refereeing. So I started training to be a referee. And a couple months after that, he's like, you know, you have the athleticism. You could be a wrestler if you wanted to. So I did wrestle for a very short period of time, but then got to a position where I not only had hurt my shoulder, but I just felt that my place in wrestling was as a referee. I could add more value to a show, and I could add more value to the community as a referee than I could as a wrestler. So I just kind of cut ways and didn't wrestle anymore and focused everything on refereeing.
Yeah, tell me more about it, because as I said in the intro of this interview, I really think it's a lost art, the one of the referees, because people don't realize how much the work that you do mean towards the complete realization of a match. And what made you realize that you could help out in that sense? Is that like a specific thing that you like to do, that you feel like you're very good at?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good question. I feel as though people need to understand that referees, not all of them, but referees can be great leaders. You know, you talk about ring generals. Yes. Being wrestlers, you know, I know Walter's got the moniker of ring general and everything, but there's so much that is conveyed through a referee if you do it properly. And that was taught for me from day one. The Bob Keller is the guy who trained me. He trained another guy named John Schuyler. John Schuyler also helped train me as well. John Schuyler is great about utilizing the referee as a part of what it needs to be as far as pulling them in at the right time, conveying information. But also Bob was really good at understanding that as a referee, you can help paint the same picture that the wrestlers are trying to do by reacting properly at the right time, and then making sure that there's just as much drama pulled in by what the referee does as what the workers do. And it's, I don't want to say it came naturally for me, but it just seemed like I was getting the grasp of it better than I was doing anything else with wrestling. And so that's why I was like, you know, I'm just going to put all my chips in on being a referee. And of course, I started studying some of the greats, you know, Tommy Young, Charles Robinson, Mike Chioda, Red Shoes. I absolutely love Red Shoes. And then I started like kind of diving into more of the MMA referees and kind of watching them a little bit there, here or there, because, you know, the idea is that people already know that wrestling is a story that's being told. Yeah. And what was told to me in the very first week of my training is just that. People know that it's a work. Our job is to make them question that aspect. Like, I thought this was a work, you know, and by doing little simple nuances to check on the person the right way makes that person out in the audience or makes that person watching it go, whoa, was that something, you know? Okay. Rather than just the referee standing there going, okay, I'm going to wait till I get a count 1, 2, 3, because there's just so much more value in that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the most difficult thing, I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but when a referee doesn't know the outcome of the match in advance, I said that a couple of times during the show. It is one of the most famous cases of this one is when The Undertaker lost the streak at WrestleMania against Brock Lesnar. And the referee, which I think was Charles Robinson, I think it was him. He didn't know the outcome, and you have to count 1, 2, 3 to for The Undertaker to lose a legendary streak, which means much more than every title in wrestling, basically.
Absolutely. So
that's an incredible weight on the shoulder of the referee in that case. Did that ever happen to you, that you didn't know the result of the match, or maybe that a match had to be changed on the spot because of, I don't know, of an injury or something?
Changed on the spot many, many times. So that's happened plenty of times. There's been times where, yes, in the Southeast where I'm at, like the area that generated here is very, very old school still. You know, I get the pleasure to work with George South a lot. And George South is like, hey, we're calling it in the ring, brother. You know, he's like, you know, you just count. You do your job and we'll do our job. And, you know, that's the thing is I was told in that infancy of me learning how to be a referee was you count to three. Your hand swings through that mat. Now, if they kick their shoulder up last minute, you have every right to say, nope, nope, it was that close.
Yeah,
I can pull that back if I need to. But if you don't kick your shoulders up, sorry, buddy, you didn't kick your shoulders up. That's not my job. My job is to count. Your job is to get it up if you need to.
Yeah. So, yeah, real old school mentality.
Absolutely.
But that gives more realism to what you're doing, I think. That helps the old process of creating the drama and for people to believe what they're actually seeing, even though their mind tells them otherwise. That's a part of the trick of what the referee do in the ring. And did you ever had like to stop a match because of an injury? Yeah.
Several times. Yeah. Unfortunately, a good friend of mine broke his arm. He was coming off the top and just landed the right way and arm snapped. I've been in several predicaments where there was a possible concussion. And again, that's something that I don't think a lot of people understand, is that all referees, in my opinion, should be educated on the signs and the signals of concussions.
Yeah.
All referees should be CPR AED certified. So you can, you will be the first responder no matter what. So you have to be able to talk intelligibly to the EMSs that come in, the EMTs that come in. Yeah. Anything like that, that's part of your responsibility. Day one as a referee, Bob told me, he goes, listen, your job, no matter what, whether it's a work or whether it's a shoot, is the safety of everybody in that ring, including yourself. So hands down, like, that's the number one thing. So you have to, that's a tricky thing too. And that's why a lot of people have commended me on this. And for me, it's not something that I've really worked on being something that's commendable. It's just my job. I'm in the healthcare profession. Like, when somebody takes a bump, I look down to see if their eyes are working, you know, to see, you know, I'll snap my fingers. I'll clap. Hey, can you hear me? Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Okay, cool. Okay. Let's bring it back. You know, that's real life to me, because as much as we train, as much as we prepare for these type of things, the slightest little thing could go wrong and it's done, you know. So you got to be quick to be there to get that, you know.
Exactly. And I don't mean to talk ill of your colleagues at all, actually, because as you said, I think it's a really tough call sometimes, and you have to be quick on your to think on your feet. But you know, lately we had the instance at All Out, AEW's All Out, when Matt Hardy basically took a bad bump, and that was an instant concussion. And the referee Aubrey Edwards, at the beginning it looks like she said that the match was over. Then suddenly it wasn't, and they took a couple of risks with Matt Hardy, and they climbed the scaffold or something like that. What do you think of this kind of a situation when you know, in that case was of course a big production. She had clearly someone talking through her earpiece or something like that, so she had to kind of reverse the decision. What would you think of a situation like that?
You know, it's hard to tell, because you should have a good relationship with anybody who's going to be in your ear, as well as the people that you're working with, whether it be in the ring or in a stadium in that case, to understand and even let them know, like, I have no problem telling the people that I work with, listen, if it looks severe to me, I will stop it, because I am very extremely concerned for your health and wellness. If you don't want that, you might want to put a different referee in for that, because I couldn't live the rest of my life knowing that I let an injury that caused a malformation, a disability, anything like that, that would haunt me, you know? So, but it's a hard decision when you're in the heat of the moment, because you don't really know, you know, because there's that old mindset of, you know, grin and bear it, and you just do your thing and you go on with it. So it's very, very tricky, you know?
Yeah, I talked with Rob Van Dam here in this podcast, and he told me he had more than 100 concussions in his career.
That's insane.
That's absolutely insane. And he said also that he puts the blame on himself, because that's the way he was taught, and so he, in each of those concussions, he wanted to keep going, mm-hmm. you know, and so he didn't want to blame anybody, any company or stuff like that. But that's absolutely insane, and I don't know your point of view. I think you may agree with me that all the procedures that have been implemented in the last few years has been for the better, probably for the business as a whole, because it means more career duration for the wrestlers, and more responsibilities for you as referees as well. But you can take action.
Ski, who used to be with WWE, he's done a lot of research in the concussions. Billy brought him in to talk with everybody involved on the roster, and I got to learn a lot from him. And it's just, it's very heartwarming for me to see that type of care being brought into it, because I came in at the time at kind of like at the tail end of that, you know, grin and bear it, just, you know, you got this, do whatever type of thing.
Yeah.
So you're seeing those changes, and my trainer, you know, he's like, listen, I got to go to work in the morning on Monday. You know, I can't go out there and risk myself. So I'm going to be as safe as I possibly can. And I want everybody else that I work with to be as safe as they possibly can. So not only can we have fun this weekend, but we can go to work on Monday and then come back and do it next weekend, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a smart mentality to have. Absolutely. Absolutely. And talking about your career as a referee, what was a highlight that you had?
Oh, man.
or even more than one. You can tell me more than one.
So, you know, of course, I think right now, like if you had to look at everything in my career, the most honorable thing for me is making that debut and Into the Fire and working with Thunder Rosa, who's like, I mean, she's absolutely amazing. Incredible, you know, yes. And just to get the opportunity to work with her is fantastic. To get the opportunity to work with Tasha Steeles, who is a great talent in herself, is great. Just to be pulled in, like, this is kind of like a dream come true. So that I guess is like the banner, the highlight, if you will, right there. I've got to work 2 years now. Yeah, 2 years with a convention that happens usually in November. Of course, it's not going to happen this year because of COVID and everything.
Yeah.
But it's WrestleCade, and they bring in lot of talent from all across. And I've got to work with Ultimo Dragon, which was mind-blowing. The company that I work with out of Charlotte, PWX, brought in Jushin Thunder Liger on his retirement tour. I didn't get to work that match, but just being in the same building with it and watching that match was really mind-blowing. But there's been some fantastic matches that, you know, I'd like to personally just share for people who might be getting into wrestling now or maybe don't even know these people. I'm I guess you could say that I'm biased in the fact that John Skyler helped train me, but just about any match that John Skyler has had in the past decade is worth taking a look at, because he's such a great storyteller and he's got such a passion for the business. I got to work an unsanctioned match with him and Corey Hollis that was all through the arena. It was one of those really fun matches, but it was one of those ones that just working with that drama. And in the same sense, that was through PWX, and I also got to work another match with PWX that saw Sirius Badu and Serpenico do a no-holds-barred bar fight type of thing, and there was just a lot of emotion. Like, walking back from that, like, I was crying. Like, there was just so much emotion, and it was great. So those are some of the ones, and there was a really good one that I actually got to work at WrestleCade, Billy Brash versus Killer Cross, who's now in NXT. Great match. So all those talents, for anybody that's listening to this or watching this, or check those guys out. They're great, fantastic workers.
Yeah, I'm gonna check those matches out myself if I can find some of those online.
I believe some of them are on High Spots Network, so you can check that out there.
Perfect. Can't wait. And which wrestler would you have wanted to work with but didn't have the chance? Maybe even somebody from the past, of course.
Von Erichs.
Oh.
I have a there's a special place in my heart for the Von Erich dynasty, and you know, I would love to work with Ross and Marshall now that they're with MLW. They're great guys, and there's just something about that family that. Prestige, if you will, that would be awesome to work.
Yeah. I get that. And what about you? What about you, your future? Of course, now we know, unfortunately, NWA Power has stopped producing for the time being. Mm-hmm. Is there anything on the horizon moving from that side? Is Power coming back, or maybe we will see you on another wrestling ring?
So as it stands right now, I don't know much about what's going on. We're still on a standby with NWA, so I have really no information on that. As it is with anything else right now, I'm actually staying away from it just with the COVID restrictions and everything that's going on right now, because I have a clientele as a massage therapist that I have to look out for, and I have to reduce the amount of risks. I have several clients that have autoimmune disorders. My wife has two autoimmune disorders. So, as much as I love wrestling and as much as I want to be a part of it, like, my family and my livelihood comes first and foremost. And at the moment that we can make a safe effort to get back into the ring, I'm going to be there just doing what I was doing before.
Any particular dream? Maybe, I don't know, a promotion or a title match that you will want to officiate?
Oh, man. There's so many, like, you could really think of, you know, and I'll say that I don't want to say that I've hit the pinnacle, but I really done well with getting the opportunity to work with NWA. And I hope that that goes on for a long period of time. You know, WWE would be cool. Like, yeah, I think anybody who's ever gotten into wrestling would want to be a part of that. Yeah. A while back on an interview that Nick Aldis did, you know, somebody asked him about a dream match that he would like to do. And he said for the world's title, versus Triple H. And I think if I could have any like fantasy, like really painting the picture and everything, time machine, all that, like put Triple H and Nick Aldis for the world's title at the Sportatorium would be mind, like, it's not a big venue, but just the history in that venue would be super cool. Super cool.
Yeah. Any other venue in your area that you are really passionate about?
There's nothing that really kind of sticks out at me like, oh man, I got to go here. I got to go do this. Uh-huh. But, you know, I think, again, you go back to the prestige of Madison Square Garden, you know, just everything that's happened in there. Like, and that's not really in my area per se, but it's just the closest thing that I could think of, like, yeah, right then and there that I would want to do. Cause I've got to do some of the cool old Crockett territory areas. I've got to work in some of those buildings, which is fantastic. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, Madison Square Garden is the dream, is the mecca of professional wrestling, for a good reason. Well, Gerald, thank you very much. It has been a great chat. But before I let you go, I need you to plug all of your channels wherever we can find you. And just do it. Just plug them all.
Awesome. So Twitter is little @. I don't know what we call it, just @. Yeah. J Fritz Ref Life. Jared.Fritz on Instagram and on TikTok. And then if you want to find me on Facebook, it's just Jared Fritz, referee. And that's my fan page there. And you can contact me on all those and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned it, I saw that you're really active on TikTok.
I'm actually very, very new to it. I resisted it for a really long period of time because I really thought it was just all about like the dance things and all that. And I really like to be – I'm very passionate about helping other people get better. So like when something hits me in my heart and in my brain, like something that I feel could help other people, I'll just do a quick little TikTok and share that because I feel like it hits the masses pretty hard because, you know, TikTok's so popular worldwide. So that's been pretty fun, you know, learning about that.
Yeah. And I saw some of the things you're saying, not only on TikTok, on all the other social media. It's pretty inspiring, and you give good advices. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for taking the time to do this chat. It was really lovely. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you so much, man. Have a great night.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Right. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much, Gerald. That was terrific. I learned so much through this interview. The NWA family is great through and through. Next week on the Last Minute Wrestling Podcast, we're going to have, let's say, a little bit of a spotlight on us because we're going to interview NJPW Strong standout, Danny Limelight. As always, you do not want to miss it. Thank you for listening. Remember to leave a comment, like, share, subscribe, and spread the word. To make sure we keep our content going, you can buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/forwardlmwpodcast, become a Patreon backer at patreon.com/forwardlmwpodcast, or donate at good old PayPal, paypal.me/forwardlmwpodcast. You can find the Last Minute Wrestling Podcast all over the platforms, on the official website, which is lmwpodcast.com, and on the portal bodyslam.net. Remember to follow us on Twitter at lmwpodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/forwardlmwpodcast. I've been Frank Mandolini, and you stay safe.